This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, March 26, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, big day today. We got a little unveiling, a little storytelling going on.
Oh man, it's the first of our Baseball Tonight features. We're very excited. We don't have any cadence on how often we'll do these, but this is the first one. We spent a good amount of time on it. I know I spent yesterday putting the final touches on it, and I'm very excited for the unveiling. Why don't you tell the people what it's all about, Buster?
It's about Alex Verdugo, who plays for the Red Sox now, and how he got really important mentoring from another player when he first came to the big leagues, when he initially had a reputation as not being a great teammate. So I thought that, you know, to hear from all the folks involved there would be a really interesting story. I've got a couple others in the pipeline, but this is the first, so very excited about this. Some news and notes as we get started today. Terrible news for the Chicago White Sox. Eloy Jimenez is going to miss 5 to 6 months after rupturing his pectoral tendon in that freak injury the other day when he jumped up trying to take a home run away. He landed, tore that pec. Here was White Sox manager Tony La Russa after the announcement was made.
And commonly an injury is something. So we talked about it at the beginning of camp. Unfortunately, it's happened. And what we made clear, we do have a little meeting about it. Our biggest concern is Eloy. He's the guy who's hurt. These guys got to go through the rehab. Here's this great player that's not going to be able to show his greatness for the season. Hopefully we get him towards the end. So we made it clear in that meeting we were concerned about him, wanting him to be around as much as possible. And as a team, you know, you look at what you have. And, you know, not what you don't have. We don't have him, but we have other guys. It's not going to be an open spot. Somebody's going to play there.
Yeah, and there's some thought that they may use Andrew Vaughn. Of course, the young hitter who's been talked about as being in a first base DH role, maybe they would use him. There's some speculation in the industry, and that's all it is as far as I know is speculation, that maybe the White Sox and the Yankees would talk about a Michael Tauchman trade. If Jay Bruce becomes a free agent and walks away from the Yankees, maybe he's that guy. But the White Sox would be looking for help. Just terrible that that injury happened. Another terrible injury. Nick Anderson of the Tampa Bay Rays has been sidelined by a partially torn elbow ligament. Look, casual fans probably don't know who Nick Anderson is, but this is one of the best relievers in baseball. Last year, 0.55 ERA, 6 saves and 19 outings. He was one of the major reasons why the Tampa Bay Rays advanced as far as they did in 2020. Matt Harvey, back in the majors with the Baltimore Orioles. They added him to their 40-man roster. Good for him. You know, fighting back. He's certainly not the pitcher that he was 6-7 years ago with the Mets, but he's fighting to extend his career. Gio Gonzalez, on the other hand, has called it a career. 13 major league seasons, announced yesterday that he's walking away. This is someone who won 10 or more games in 9 straight seasons. He got Cy Young votes in 2 seasons. What a great pro. One of my favorite people in the game. Look, after all that bad news, we'd need some good stuff. Shohei Ohtani again.
It's good here, lefty on lefty. Boy, he lets it travel. High fly ball left field toward the corner. Toward the wall. Gone! My goodness, what a spring in 2021 for Shohei Ohtani.
Darren, what'd you say about comfortable in a good battle against a left-handed pitcher? First pitch swinging. Other way. 5 home runs now in camp for Shohei Ohtani.
He looks tremendous. Sad news about Bobby Brown. Longtime Yankee, former American League president, passed away at age 96. This is someone who is a veteran of World War II and the Korean War. He, after he left baseball, became a prominent cardiologist. He was the American League president for an extended period. He passed away on Thursday. Now, before we get to Carl Ravitch, to Todd Radom, to Bobby Nightingale with the Reds preview and that Alex Verdugo feature that we're so fired up about, one last time, Taylor, UFC 260.
It's the rematch, Stipe Miocic versus Francis Ngannou. Oh, I almost had it there. So smooth.
Almost had it.
But I drilled it into my head last night when I typed up this promo. So Stipe Miocic, Francis Ngannou.
Very nice. And this is on Saturday. It is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99 at ESPNplus.com/PPV.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
That's right, Carl Ravitch. Of course, the host of Baseball Tonight, play-by-play man for ESPN. And Ravi, you have a little getaway before the start of the season. You know, this is like, for you, if you were a starting pitcher, this would be like your two-inning outing, your little tune-up before the start of the year.
That's right. I wanted to acclimate myself to what everybody is doing. Maybe the Blue Jays, of course, you know, going to start the season down here in Florida. So I came down, got a little spring training action, saw some teams, and now we're just great because starting on the 30th, Buster, of March, when we have our Baseball Tonight preview top 100 show, we then dive into a whole week of great opening week coverage on ESPN. I can't wait. A lot of work, and nobody's more excited about it than Tim Kirkshen, me, Eduardo, you, Jess, Benetti, Schulman, whoever's working for us. We're all fired up. It's our season. It's back, and it's 162.
We're back and we're ready to go. There is a lingering question I've been asking every week, and I wonder if you hear anything different. Anything new on Universal DH for the National League? Anything new on expanded playoffs? I did hear a little flicker of possibility that they're going to revisit expanded playoffs. What about you? What have you heard on those two fronts?
Again, like I said last week, nothing that is being said publicly would indicate anything's going to change. And I know I said last week, nothing would surprise me if it did. I would hope that we hear nothing and something changes. That's the ultimate goal, which means that both sides were able to get something done because, golly, I hate going into a season thinking this might be our last for a little while. I hate that. So I'd be wonderful to see them cooperate without collaborating with members of the media.
I'm guessing, too, that you probably had the same reaction I did when you saw Zach Gallen, terrific young pitcher for the Diamondbacks, gets hurt taking batting practice, knowing what's in baseball's future.
Rinse and repeat. Said the same thing on the podcast last week. There needs to be, there should be, there's no reason not to be. They may make the argument it's too late and National League teams built their teams or avoided signing DH quote types because they didn't think there was going to be one, and that's going to be a miscarriage of competitive balance. Again, I don't believe it. I think the ultimate goal, which we in this sport keep kind of contradicting ourselves, but the ultimate goal is to get the best players on the field as often as possible.
Yeah, and I'd say this, and I've heard that similar explanation that, well, it's too late for National League teams. Well, they haven't talked to the National League teams because I hear questions from folks there. What do you hear? You know, please tell me that they're going to agree to this because they certainly want it. I mean, you're telling me the New York Mets with Dom Smith at left field wouldn't want a universal DH? Are you kidding? Of course they would.
Of course.
So yesterday, terrible news about Eloy Jimenez being out for 5 or 6 months with that injury. What was your reaction when you saw and heard that?
Well, I saw the injury. I was watching the game, and, you know, he went back, and then he went down, and it was one of those injuries where you've seen athletes go down, and they know there's something seriously wrong. He didn't move. It looked so innocent. He went up, kind of like Mike Trout. You kind of stick your arm over the wall, maybe use that arm to lift yourself up on the fence. So it's just really, really sad. And unfortunately for me, I look at it, and I've heard so many people say you can't turn the athlete in the athlete off. And we know that's been requested of certain guys. Please, you know, think about what you're doing. Think about the circumstance. Think about the time of year. Think about the long haul. Think about the big picture. And Eloy Jimenez being lost for that amount of time is devastating to a team that's built to win right now over a play in spring training in which we've seen games, innings roll over. We're going to call this after six. Really, we have to try to make a web gem type catch. I just wish there was a switch that he could have flipped as he was going back, looking up and saying, forget it, just let it go. I got 162 games. We got a chance to get into a World Series and maybe win one. I want to be a part of that, and that didn't happen. It's really frustrating and sad.
And in talking with people around baseball yesterday, they were telling me that that's the sort of injury that's it's not a sure thing to come back from. It could be problematic. There could be complications as you come back. And remember, this is a young player who signed a six-year, $43 million deal basically before he played in the big leagues. And a lot of times when those deals are signed, there's criticism, sometimes even from peers saying, why would you sell yourself short? You know what? This is a case where in the end, it might have turned out to be really smart, depending on how he comes back from this injury, for him to lock that in. And, you know, we would expect that the White Sox will make a move for, you know, whether it's a Michael Tauchman or a Jay Bruce, they'll go out and add somebody. And if you're going to have a position where you need to fill, left field is one of the easier ones to do that.
Yeah. When you think about the teams, and I know you've done it, when you rank the teams in the American League that could finish with the best record in the American League, the White Sox are on the short list, in my opinion, with the Yankees. That's it. Those are the two teams. And think about taking, again, Aaron Judge for 6 months off the Yankees. Think about taking Gleyber Torres for 6 months. This isn't 6 weeks. This is a long, long period of time. It's devastating.
And there was another devastating injury that we heard about yesterday. Nick Anderson, the terrific reliever for the Tampa Bay Rays, is a torn elbow ligament. They're saying he might be out until after the All-Star break. Again, that's the sort of injury you just never know how quickly he'll be able to come back. If you're a right-handed hitter in the American League, you have been dominated the last 2 years by Nick Anderson. Held righties to a 156 average, a 269 slugging percentage. Look, the Rays have a ton of depth. They seem to invent relievers better than any organization in baseball. But, man, especially just a week away from the start of the regular season, this one really hurt.
It does, and I think just bigger picture, this does feel like, look, we have injuries every spring training, and we have significant injuries every spring training. But it almost, coming off of a 60-game season, going into a 162, there does feel to me like this is going to be a war of attrition, survival of the fittest. Which teams can stay healthiest? Which teams have the most really usable quality depth on them? At some point, the Rays' lack of star player or reliable player, obviously they traded away great starting pitching. They lost Morton. They lost Snell. They lose Anderson. The Patriots let Tom Brady go to Tampa Bay. At some point, you run out of depth, and the system that relies on A, analytics, but B, really, really good baseball players, when you remove so many really, really good baseball players, at some point, it catches up to you and the scales tip. I don't know this is the year, but at some point, that is inevitable.
Especially when you've got the Yankees in your division, and with that depth of that lineup, the way the rotations looked in spring training, the Yankees are a team that's absolutely built for the regular season. Might be tough for the Rays to keep up with them. Real quick, I want to ask you, division by division, who do you have winning? American League East.
Yankees, easily. I don't think there's a team that's competitive. I'm just really worried, too. The Blue Jays have had a bunch of little injuries. I just don't like the way that starts for them.
American League Central. You talked about the White Sox.
There's no doubt. I think the White Sox play with the Yankees as far as number of wins in the season. I love the White Sox pitching. Everybody loves their position players. I'm a big fan of their pitching. I think Kopech coming back is important. I loved Rodon when he was in college. Obviously, he kind of got lost for the first few years of his career. I think they're loaded. I like the White Sox in the Central fairly easily.
American League West.
I have the Angels, and I have Shohei Ohtani as my MVP. I think people are sleeping on what his comeback means, how great a player he is when he's in the batter's box, how good he is as a pitcher. I think the Angels actually wrestled that away from the Astros. Some of those injuries to the Astros so far this spring trouble me.
I'm amazed by how much you and I are agreeing. We're both in trouble on that one. All right. National League West, you taking Dodgers or Padres?
I take the Dodgers. I have the Padres as a wild card. I have Walker Buehler winning the National League Cy Young this year.
Wow.
You know, that could go either way. But look, they're both going to get into the playoffs. They're both going to win 90-plus games. I love the Dodgers. And they added the Cy Young winner to a team that was the best. Come on.
National League Central.
I have the Cardinals. I think, you know, the addition of Arenado is good. I think Flaherty, for as good as all the young pitchers were, I think he could be even better. I think there's more in Flaherty's tank. I think the other teams took a step back in the National League Central, so I have the Cardinals winning that division.
And the toughest division in baseball, the National League East.
Yeah, I have the Braves winning that. I think that the Braves have the depth to get by with some of the injuries to their pitchers that they have now. I think we might forget how great Ian Anderson was. And to me, Ian Anderson benefits by having veterans around him. And where somebody like Glasnow, who is not a baby anymore, when you lose Morton and you lose Snell, I think it magnifies your performances. And Anderson was so dominant, and they have so many good pitchers on that team that he doesn't still need to be the dominant guy. I think he may become that, but they don't need him to do that. I think the Braves win that division. I think the Mets win the wild card.
All right, we've got this feature coming up on Alex Verdugo. What were your impressions of him in his first year with the Red Sox last year?
Well, I think Alex Verdugo was in a no-win situation because he was part of a deal that Mookie Betts went to the Dodgers and then won a World Series. Once you get past that fact, I thought Alex Verdugo really distinguished himself. I thought he was a good guy for that city, which I think is a really, really big part of playing in Boston. We've seen athletes go to certain cities and they can't get it done there. I think he fit in there. I think he's a very capable outfielder. I like his athleticism. I think there were some concerns about his back. I think Alex Verdugo distinguished himself really well. And I think the Red Sox, in the end, that trade is going to be okay for them. They lose it because they lost Betts, but I think that's going to work out okay. And Verdugo's a big part of it.
All right, Carl, good to talk with you.
Thanks, Lester.
Here's more on Alex Verdugo's initiation into the major leagues.
When Mookie Betts was traded to the Dodgers, the centerpiece in the package of players going to the Red Sox was Alex Verdugo, a 23-year-old outfielder with an incredible range of skills. Longtime lefty Rich Hill, now a member of the Tampa Bay Rays, played with Verdugo with the Dodgers as Verdugo emerged in the big leagues for the first time.
You could tell he had the ability all around. He could run. He could hit for power. He can hit for all these things. I say he could. He can. He can do everything, really.
Hill learned firsthand about Verdugo's powerful throwing arm.
I remember one day we were kind of messing around on the outfield, and we were just playing catch. It was during batting practice, and he was throwing the baseball with such effortless ease from the left side with movement, and it was a little intimidating trying to catch it on the other end. And I asked him if he had ever pitched or if he had any interest in pitching. So, you know, when we were just messing around in the outfield and playing catch, it was just, we were all laughing. I think myself, Walker Buehler, and Clayton were just standing there and laughing at how easy it was coming out of his hand and how much movement it had and how, you know, it wasn't fun to catch.
Here's Alex Verdugo.
All I know is that it doesn't matter where I go, what level, who it is, but nobody likes to catch my knuckleball. Anytime I throw him a couple real ones, it's like, okay, we're done. We're done here. We're not, no.
But Verdugo had initially carried a reputation from his early years in pro ball as being less than an ideal teammate. Someone who, in the clubhouse, was kind of a bull in the china shop personality because his energy could be overbearing and he could be loud. Here's Dave Roberts, Verdugo's first manager.
when I reflect on Alex Verdugo into our clubhouse is I see a lot of swagger. I see a lot of gold. I see bright red, green, representing his country, Mexico, shoes. I see, did I say gold? I saw a lot of gold. Alex, it was almost like you could hear him, whether it's his gold chains or his voice before you could see him. But I will tell you this, this guy is a baseball player. So Alex took a lot of ribbing, but he has always been and always will be one of my favorites because this guy's passion, he's got a light that shines brighter than anybody.
Verdugo became aware of how others perceived him.
My internal reaction is like, you get so angry, you know what I mean? You just get so mad. It just felt like for me, I was being labeled every single where I went, you know? And it was like, people tell you like, hey, when you get to the bigs, when you get here, when you get there, like, you know, be yourself, you know, don't try to be anyone you're not, don't try to act, like just be yourself. And then it's like, okay, well, I'm sorry that myself is a little bit louder or, you know, a little bit, you know, more, I like to mess around, but I'm also very serious. I am who I am. You know, I think at some points that, yeah, it stepped on some people's toes or some veterans' toes the wrong way where they thought, you know, who is this kid coming up here? Like, he has no time, anything like that. And it frustrates you. But also at the same time, like, I look back and I understand where it came from, too. You know, I had to, a lot of growing up to do in the same sense. And, you know, it's also one of those things. I wanted baseball to humble me, but I also didn't want baseball to take that fire out of me.
In Washington one day, amid Verdugo's first weeks in the big leagues, he missed the first team bus to the ballpark, arriving well after the others. As Verdugo remembers, Hill noted his tardiness out loud with reporters nearby.
I do remember there was one kind of like real serious one, and I think it was the Nationals. It was like my first year. I happened to be missed the bus, and he kind of got on me a little bit. We went from the West Coast over there, and it was just a tough travel for me, and I wasn't able to sleep, and we had a weird bus time that day, and I ended up sleeping through my alarm and just missing the bus, and had to get a ride to the park by one of the one of our front office guys. And when I got there, just Rich had kind of let me have it a little bit, just kind of, you know, like what a veteran's supposed to do to a rookie at that point. You know, he kind of let me know that these things weren't acceptable. He pulled me to the side and just kind of right when he saw me, right when I got in there, he let me know. And, you know, it might have been in front of some media, in front of some teammates. And, you know, sometimes I think about it and it's like, you know, maybe we could have done it differently. But at the end of the day, like, I appreciated him, you know, even going out and doing that, because, you know, it shows that at some point he does care, you know, and it's a problem when the guys, they don't if they see you doing something wrong and they continue to kind of let you do it or, you know, then that's when you kind of notice that there's a real big problem, just because it's kind of like, in a way, they're giving up on you. You know, it's like, it's too much of a hassle. He doesn't care.
Hill was among the veterans who talked to Verdugo about what would be expected from him as a teammate, passing down what Hill himself had learned, including from a Hall of Famer.
I remember back when I was young in the game, asking Greg Maddux, you know, we had a good conversation. I remember one time during spring training in a backfield shagging fly balls, and one of the points that he brought up to me was just always remember and know what you want to do the day before you get to the field. So he said, know what you want to do the night before you get to the field, and make sure that, you know, you execute it and get it done before moving on to anything else, that, you know, whether it's interviews or I don't know, some other intangible things that you may have going on that you have to take care of. Business is business, which is, you know, making sure you get your lifts in, making sure you show up on time, making sure, you know, you tip the clubhouse guys the right way. All these little things that go a long way is just kind of things that I was trying to pass down to Alex.
Verdugo says that in growing up, he had a problem, thinking that he knew everything, and he didn't listen. But in this case, he took the words of Hill and others to heart.
It really set the tone for me, saying that, like, hey, like, you know, you got a lot of proof here and you got a long way to go.
The informal chats continued, sometimes in the outfield during batting practice.
I mean, me and Rich, I had the pleasure of, you know, getting to know him, obviously, and having numerous conversations. But yeah, I remember there were several conversations where, you know, I would meet him in the outfield at various ballparks, and he'd be shagging, doing his good old Forrest Gump impression with the run in and getting after some balls. So we would talk and mess around.
When I go back to the players that I've played with and guys that are extremely routine oriented and extremely successful, they're extremely successful because they are routine oriented, like a Derek Jeter, Clayton Kershaw, Dustin Pedroia, David Ortiz. Think back to even watching Mariano Rivera. I mean, not that I played with him, but just watching him, Chris Carpenter, Adam Wainwright, Yadier Molina, Juan Pierre. All these guys had long, and they still are, some of them are still playing, long successful careers. Because they were good, but eventually, you know, when you get to the big leagues, and I told them this, everybody's the same here. It's what's going to separate, you know, you from the next guy and trusting that routine. I think he took it all in, and I think he really, you know, took it to heart as far as, you know, the things that we talked about it. And yeah, I think he received it really well, and he listened too. And, you know, he's constantly wanting to learn.
I just always would go into those conversations with, you know, an open mind, and, you know, I would hear some stuff that I really liked, and I would hear some stuff that, you know, I really didn't care too much for, but it never meant that I fully disregarded, you know, what was being said. I would just kind of keep it in a safe in the back of my head and just have that knowledge there.
Aldin Gonzalez covers the West Coast teams for ESPN, including the Dodgers.
But they've actually fostered a really good environment where young players can come up and just sort of be themselves. Even dating back to Jock Peterson when he was young, Cody Bellinger, Walker Buehler. There's a reason why these guys come up and just sort of succeed. And I think with Alex, a lot of it was him just sort of taking some steps to mature a little bit more. A lot of it was a Dodgers clubhouse that I think found the right balance of just sort of guiding him in the right way, but also just sort of letting him be himself and just sort of letting the character traits that make him a good baseball player still come through while he learns to sort of be a big leaguer. And I really think that the narrative on Alex Verdugo early on versus what it became when he established himself in 2019 changed pretty dramatically.
Verdugo initially struggled with the Red Sox in 2020, and he often let out his frustration in the tunnel behind the Boston dugout until veteran Mitch Moreland said something.
And, you know, every at-bat, it felt like I was kind of going in the tunnel and, you know, hitting something or throwing a helmet down. And Mitch, you know, kind of made a side comment like, dang. Shoot, seeing him act like that's got me exhausted, you know? It's like I'm tiring him out just watching what I'm doing. And I sat back on that and, you know, I thought about it and I went over there and I apologized to the team. And, you know, this anger, this stuff that I show, I want you guys to know that it's from a good place. You know, it's because I'm a competitor. I'm so used to competing. And, you know, I felt like towards the middle and end of the season, you know, I was a lot better. I was able to handle it more. It was kind of cool. Jason Veritek got a nice little punching bag right in the tunnel. So we'd go down there and I got a nice little inflatable punching bag when he put my Verdugo jersey on it, number 99.
He finished strongly, batting .308. Thriving in a year in which Boston struggled, his energy and his effort standing out. And he had breakthrough moments in a game against the Blue Jays August 7th.
Bottom two, tied 1-1. Verdugo hitting .258. His first Red Sox home run came on Wednesday. He'll go after that one and drive that one high. It's deep to left, and that ball's gone. And Verdugo will lead off the inning. Alex with a home run in the second into the monster seats. That ball is hammered. That's a high fly ball, twisting deep, deep, deep. Gone! Verdugo strikes again. This is a high fly ball, driven deep to right. Verdugo back to the pen. Leaps up, he caught it! He caught the ball! He took it back!
Holy cow. What a night! What a night!
Rich Hill grew up less than 15 miles from Fenway Park and knows the long history of left-handed hitters who thrived in Fenway because they took the ball to left center and peppered the Green Monster. Wade Boggs, Mike Greenwell, David Ortiz. The left-handed hitting Verdugo can take the ball with power to left center.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I heard the trade happened, I had gotten a chance to talk to a few people in Boston and just said, you know, hey, you guys got a really good player here, and not just any player. I think he can, you know, be a perennial all-star and be a standout in Boston because of his ability to put the bat to the ball and consistently create damage with runners on and or start a rally. I mean, and again, it's the way he, just the way he goes about playing the game. I think of players right off the top of my head who play hard, you know, like a Chase Utley, for example, a Clayton Kershaw, a Dustin Pedroia. You look at Jose Abreu and with the White Sox, you know, I put Alex in that category, you know, Walker Buehler guy. And it doesn't have to be just a position player, right? I mentioned a few pitchers because when you go to the game and you buy the ticket, you want to see the intensity and the passion from the player, whether it's the pitcher or a position player.
Hill believes that fans in Boston will continue to respond to Verdugo's energy and enthusiasm, as they seemed to do last year from afar in the coronavirus season in which they were locked out of Fenway Park. He believes teammates will recognize Verdugo's passion as he recognized that of Dustin Pedroia.
Dustin made my career, I feel, a lot better, or kind of rejuvenated me and got more out of myself when I saw his effort and what he brought on a daily basis and what consistent intensity looked like. And that was something that I saw and I was like, wow, this is, if this guy's showing up at 1 o'clock and he's ready with, you know, full batting practice uniform on, it wasn't fake. It was real. It was every single day. And that's what Alex has. Alex has that every single day. It's the same mentality. It's the passion, the joy, the intensity, the love for the game. Whatever you want to put a title over it, he has that for the game. So he's going to do fine here in Boston.
For me, I love the fans. I think the fans are a big part of the game. I miss that interaction. You know, they're talking, they're smack. You know, They're kind of, you know, letting you have it. Like, I miss that, especially when I'm in New York. You know, if I'm in the Yankee Stadium and all that, like, I want that, man. I want it. Like, I might, I know you got to be careful what you ask for, you know, but but for me, man, I love it, dude. I really do.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He is a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Good day to you, sir.
And good day to you, Buster. You and I live not 10 miles apart. It is a beautiful March day. It's going to be 75 degrees. So the theme here is green shoots of optimism and the looming season.
Absolutely. Yeah, we live 10 miles away. But, you know, I've been following you at your website, toddradom.com.
Nicely done.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Well, I'm a professional. all right. Before we get to this week's quiz, which I'm already beginning to hate because Taylor won last week's, we want to talk about forgotten franchises. And this week, we're going to talk about a team from the Federal League.
Feds, Buster. That's exactly right. We're going to talk about the Chicago Whales, a well-named ball club. In 1914, the Federal League proclaimed itself a third major league circuit. And its Chicago entry, then known as the Chicago Federals, or Chi-Feds, was catapulted to a lofty perch. Prior to the 1915 season, the club held a contest to come up with a better name for the team. And the winning entry was Whales, which was suggested by a Mr. J.D. Eichhoff of Chicago, who won a season pass for his efforts. Team owner Charles Wiegman said that the name denoted athletic prowess and power. The Whales were managed by former Cubs standout Joe Tinker of Tinker to Evers to Chance fame. And it's actually Evers, not Evers, but I'm reading from this. And another future Hall of Famer and former Cub, pitcher Mordecai Three Finger Brown, won 17 games for the club in 1915. So this is, Buster, a legit major league circuit, recognized as such by the powers that be these days. The Whales took home the Federal League's last championship in 1915 with an 86-66 record. But their legacy lives on today, more than a century after they spouted their last ambergris. In 1914, Wiegman built his club a new ballpark, which he modestly called Wiegman Park. And after the 1915 season, the Federal League reached a settlement with MLB, dissolving the circuit. Part of the arrangement involved Wiegman buying a controlling interest in the National League's Chicago Cubs for $500,000. I saw the new valuations for ball clubs. Cubs are worth a little bit more than that now. He bought it from Charles Murphy and Charles Phelps Taft, the half-brother of former President William Howard Taft. A number of the Whales' top players were shifted to the Cubs roster, and the Cubs moved to Wiegman Park, which we now are quite familiar with today as Wrigley Field. Nice. So we have the Chicago Whales to thank Wrigley Field for. Finally, Buster, the Whales' 1915 home jerseys morphed into the Cubs' 1916 uniforms, with a whale within an elongated C replaced by a cub within an elongated C. And I'll tweet that out later. So all hail the Whales, this week's forgotten franchise.
Nicely done. I love this. My question to you, and people, I think, casual baseball fans wouldn't know about the Federal League 1914-1915. We'll bring it to present day. Which league do you feel like had more credibility, the Federal League or the XFL, the Football League?
Which version of the XFL, Buster? The hate me version, the OG version?
You can pick.
I think the Federal League has a little bit more credibility. Yeah. It was real baseball, and the aftermath of the Federal League affects us even today and will be when we're talking about labor strife, which, seems like it's coming up soon, because there were a slew of lawsuits that ensued following the demise of the Federal League. And part of it led up to, if I'm not mistaken, the antitrust exemption that baseball enjoys to this day. And, the Federal League lives on in certain respects.
Yeah, I think the Federal League probably was closer to the old AFL than the XFL in terms of, having, elements of it, players of it folded back into the, the stronger league, the American League and the National League.
Yeah, and they had star power, the likes of which we discussed just a couple of minutes ago. And there's going to be a theme throughout these forgotten franchises, Buster. We're going to have third leagues, second leagues in the case of the American Association, which lasted for 10 years, challenging the National League back in the 19th century. We're throwing it way back, excellent facial hair, dirty play, all kinds of stuff. And I've got some great franchises lined up to discuss all season long.
Lots of swag. All right, let's get to this week's quiz when I'm going to even up.
That's what you think.
All right, Buster. Here we go. When the late Hank Aaron broke in with the Milwaukee Braves in 1954, he wore this uniform number. Was it A, 44? Was it B, 4? Was it C, 5? Or was it D, 52? Hank Aaron's original uniform number with the Braves, 44, 4, 5, or 52?
Taylor?
Let's go 52. I feel like that's the outlier here.
Yeah, there's no chance. I know this one. 5C. Done. We are tied.
Buster is correct. You are tied.
Rascal.
Did you actually know that, Buster? Or, what's going on here?
Wait a second. Was there any hesitation? I think the bigger surprise was whether or not Taylor would know that one. And if you had gotten that one, I would have demanded an investigation. I love the fact you went with 52. Not close. We're tied 1-1. The Empire Strikes Back.
All right. Wow, gauntlet thrown, and the regular season hasn't even begun. It's going to get nasty.
Absolutely. All right, Todd, thank you.
All right, guys, thanks.
Bobby Nightingale covers the Reds for the Cincinnati Inquirer. And Bobby, what was the goal of the Reds offseason as part of this division in National League Central where so few teams actually made moves?
Yeah, I almost think you have to look at it as
they were required to cut some money compared to last season. I mean, they traded closer Raisel Iglesias. They cut setup man Archie Bradley. They lost catcher Kirk Casale, backup outfielder Brian Goodwin. They lost a lot of depth in the offseason. The only free agent that they signed was Sean Doolittle. Then they brought in some other guys on, you know, some high flyer type pitchers that they hope to be able to fix that don't have much major league experience. But otherwise, you know, they made their first playoff appearance in 7 years last season. And then coming into this year, it was definitely kind of a, for the fan base, kind of an upsetting way to enter the season, because it was like you had all this momentum. You had Trevor Bauer and Anthony DeSclafani lost as free agents, didn't get a shortstop, which was their biggest need all offseason. And as you mentioned, the division was kind of up for grabs, and it was just such a quiet offseason for them.
And they didn't address, and I, you know, sometimes we'll see a reaction to moves by Reds fans on social media. They didn't address the offense, which was surprisingly stagnant last year.
Yeah, I think they're just counting on internal improvement. I think they're just saying the 60-game sample was so weird for them. You know, they had the lowest batting average in the league. Their batting average on balls in play was 20 points lower than any other team. They're just looking at it and saying, you know, the guys that they got beforehand, the Mike Moustakas, the Nick Castellanos, Shogo Akiyama, those free agents, they're just looking at them and saying, we're going to double down and expect them to contribute, and our offense is good enough if – in a 162-game sample, they believe that those guys will kind of play to their track records versus last year, where so many guys had down years, like Eugenio Suarez. They expect Joey Votto to hit a little bit better. So they're confident that the offense will improve naturally, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah, what's Votto's situation now?
Yeah, he returned to camp after testing positive for COVID. He missed about 13 days, I believe. He hasn't played in a B game yet. He hasn't played in a Cactus League game yet. Still ramping up in terms of physical activity. So it'll be a question mark whether he's ready for opening day, or maybe he has to wait an extra 3 or 4 days before returning to game action. But he's experimented a lot with new swings, especially at the end of last season. He got benched in last August for 3 games. And after that, he made a huge change where he kind of went back to the way he was hitting his rookie year early in his career, where he's standing up taller, not choking up as much. And he's really selling out for power. I mean, he's a guy who hit, I think, 12 homers in 2019, 15 homers the year before that. And he hit 6 homers in September. So if he's a guy who can hit 25 homers for the Reds, and that's what he's trying to do, is become more dangerous, because I think he felt that pitchers had no reason to walk him if he wasn't a threat to hit homers anymore.
Who's the most pivotal guy on the roster for them to contend in your eyes?
To contend, I think it has to be Eugenio Suarez, especially now that they moved him to shortstop. You know, he's going to be playing a little bit out of position. It's the first time he's played there in 6 years on a regular basis. And he also had a down year offensively last year, and I think that was kind of part of the offensive struggles. He's a guy who hit 49 homers in 2019. Since the beginning of the 2018 season, Mike Trout's the only guy with more homers. So he's kind of the key to the offense. I mean, Jesse Winker, they think, is really going to hit well. Joey Votto, they think, a rebound. Nick Castellanos and Mike Moustakas, they have their track records. If Eugenio Suarez has a good offensive season, I think that's kind of the key for them. And then as a shortstop, I mean, that's a huge bonus if they can get a shortstop who can hit 40 homers and play average defense, which is a high ask for a guy who's played third base the last 6 years.
I think the Cubs and the Giants are two teams that will absolutely pivot quickly into sell mode if the first couple of months don't go well. The Reds are interesting because they certainly have players in their major league roster who would be would draw interest from other teams if they put them out in the trade market. But on the other hand, Bob Castellini, their owner, is known as being hyper competitive, and he doesn't like to quit. How quickly could you see them pivoting to a midseason sell-off if they don't play well early?
Yeah, I think they'd wait till the end. I mean, then at least till mid-July, where they'd consider that, just because I think they're going to give it all they have. I mean, the starting rotation, you know, like Luis Castillo and Sonny Gray, I think those would be two big trade chips, but they're also a big part of the future. They're both under contract for the next couple of years. Eugenio Suarez is on a team-friendly deal. So I think those are the top guys they could trade off. But, you know, some of the big names, I mean, like Nick Castellanos is under contract for 3 more years. Mike Moustakas is under contract for 3 more years. I think Joey Votto still has 3 more years on his deal. So it's like you're still going to have a lot of these guys that might not be tradable. So at this point, I think they're just going to ride it as hard as they can. And I think they look at the division saying there's not a dominant team. So all it takes is a couple of good months, and you should be right in that thing.
Bobby, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets. Last time for the week. Just remember, Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, they are your one-stop shop for everything NCAA tournament going into the weekend. To the tweets now, Josh Stay at Josh Stay. Can't the umps do a quick check of the pitchers when they come in the game like the refs do before a UFC fight? That'll be a quick and easy fix, wouldn't it?
I wrote about that 5 or 6 years ago, that if they were serious about it, then they would just check all the pitchers before they started. It would become standard operating procedure. No one would be offended. It would just become part of the process. But until they actually use the umpire to enforce the rules, it's all eyewash.
All right. And we're going to close it out with a double dose of Don Irvine at Don Irvine. First up, he writes in, if Josh Bell and Kyle Schwarber return to their peak hitting form, and if the starting pitchers do the same, will the Nationals contend for the NL East title, or are the Braves just too loaded?
I think they will contend. I still think the Braves, over the course of 162 games, are the better team. I'm going to pick them to win the National League East.
All right, last one again from Don Irvine, and I'm going to answer this question for you really quickly. Just how desperate are the Orioles to add Matt Harvey to their opening day roster, and is there any chance that he will be anything close to what he was during his time with the Mets? One, they are very desperate, and two, no. Am I on there, Buster?
You are 100% on. But I respect the fact that Matt Harvey's trying to make it work.
Of course.
You know, yeah. He's trying to extend his career, and he is been willing to, bounce around and go from team to team and try to make adjustments and pitch. And so that's pretty cool that he's making that effort.
Indeed. All right. That does it for Bleacher Tweets. That does it for the podcast for the week. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And let us know what you think of the feature on Twitter, everyone. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd love to hear the feedback on that. Those Red Sox highlights, courtesy of Nesson. That's it for today. My thanks to Carl, to Todd, to Bobby, Alex Verdugo, Rich Hill, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.